It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Alan Greenspan is being asked right now, can the government prevent the next crisis?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. The former Federal Reserve Chairman is on Capitol Hill this morning talking to the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. And we will inquire into that in just a moment. But first, the stock exchange is just waking up. Where's Wall Street? Not a big drop. The S&P 500 is down 0.2%. The NASDAQ is basically flat. And the Dow is down 26 points at 10,944. Investors are cautiously awaiting what the current Federal Reserve Chair, Ben Bernanke, will say today about the economy. They're also waiting for today's auction of 10-year Treasury notes. That'll tell us something about where interest rates are headed. Stocks in Europe are slightly lower now. They were mostly higher in Asia. Now let's bring in the president of Woodley Park Research, Richard DeKayser, coming to us live from Washington, D.C. Morning, Richard.
Good morning, Bill.
So right now in your city, former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan is the star witness for the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. He was a huge figure in the crisis. What is he saying?
Well, I think he's going through his litany as to what are the factors that drove the financial crisis, and he's, for the most part, doing an excellent job of identifying all the players, ratings agencies, investors, home buyers, of course. But he's going to emphasize, really, the role of low interest rates globally. And I think the focus is going to fall to the role that the central bank, that is the Federal Reserve, did or did not play in these events.
And yeah, he's defended himself, saying, it wasn't the Fed's short-term interest rates that really caused the problem. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. You're right. The defense that the chairman's making is basically the Federal Reserve controls short-term interest rates, but the housing market was driven by long-term interest rates. And that's true enough, except if you look at when the bubble really blew up, 2004, 2005, the Fed still had low interest rates. And what happened is that people were flocking in droves to adjustable-rate mortgages, which are keyed to short-term interest rates. So at that particular moment, the general principle that short-term interest rates don't drive the housing market, in my opinion, did not apply.
So then, Richard, Congress is debating new financial reforms right now. If you think the Fed does have some power to prevent a crisis, does that mean you would say, no, we don't need all these new tools, new regulators?
Basically, yes. And one of the things that's winding its way through Congress right now is the idea of a super regulator above the Federal Reserve and others, specifically tasked with identifying the next risk coming down the pike. I don't think you can assemble a room with smart people that's necessarily going to be that much better off than the room of smart people already at the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
So to the extent they missed it, I'm not sure we can find another group that won't.
Very good. Richard DeKayser, Woodley Park Research, thank you.
My pleasure.
Also in Washington, the public school system there will announce today it plans to start adjusting teachers' pay based on students' performance. The school system's new contract with teachers includes a merit pay system funded by private foundations. Marketplace's education correspondent, Amy Scott, is with us live from New York. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
How would the merit pay system work?
Well, an official announcement is scheduled for about an hour from now, but news reports are saying this would be a voluntary system. Teachers would have to qualify, and if they do, they'll be eligible for annual bonuses based on student achievement.
And how common is merit pay in public schools?
Well, not very common yet, though. The idea is picking up some steam. Other school districts have tried it in cities like Denver and Houston. I spoke this morning with Aaron Pallas at Teachers College at Columbia University. He says it's not clear that it really works.
The intended outcome generally is to raise student achievement, and we don't really have a whole lot of evidence right now that merit pay is a very effective strategy for raising student achievement.
And some critics worry about fraud. You know, they say if teachers get paid based on test scores, you know, some might be tempted to cook the books.
Well, how do teachers feel about this idea?
Well, they've been pretty divided. Unions have generally opposed merit pay because they worry about teachers being judged on what many see as arbitrary measures, like test scores. D.C. will reportedly use other measures, too. But obviously, certain teachers stand to make a lot more money, according to the Wall Street Journal, as much as $100,000 or more.
That's our education correspondent, Marketplace's Amy Scott in New York. Thanks, Amy.
You're welcome.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, April 7th at Marketplace.org. General Motors unveils its earnings for the first full quarter out of bankruptcy today. The results were delayed 2 weeks while the automaker polished its bookkeeping, which might sound a little weird given it is starting with a clean slate. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon has more.
GM has promised for nearly a year to reinvent itself.
General Motors needs to start over in order to get stronger. Reinvention is the only way we can fix this. And fix it, we will.
Now, thanks to something auditors call fresh start accounting, GM gets to adjust its debts and assets in a way that can help a company just out of bankruptcy put a positive spin on its balance sheet. Analyst David Silver at Wall Street Strategies says it means GM can ignore past performance.
The old GM really isn't comparable to what we have today. They got rid of the majority of their debt. They got rid of their health care costs. So they're really a much healthier company than they were, say, this time last year.
Silver says today's report is a big step toward making GM attractive as a publicly traded company again. The Obama administration has made no secret of its desire to sell the government's 60% stake.
They gave a lot of money to General Motors, and they're really anxious to prove that it worked. That's why they're so anxious to really put the best face forward, to work to get this IPO and really get the taxpayers' money back.
That initial public offering could come later this year, according to GM and federal officials. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The European low-cost airline Ryanair, based in Ireland, is taking the idea of a no-frills flight to new heights. The company has announced it will charge passengers to use the restroom. From London, our Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
Ryanair first floated this plan a year ago, but then, under a hail of criticism, withdrew it. Now they've decided to revive the idea. Passengers on short flights of less than 1 hour will have to use a coin-operated toilet. The cost of admission, £1, the equivalent of about $1.50. The airline's head of communications is Stephen McNamara. He says the pay toilet won't raise much revenue themselves, but they will deter inconvenient behaviour.
The majority of passengers don't actually get up and move around the cabin during a one-hour flight, but there are a minority who do, and we want to try and change the behaviour of that minority so that they go to the toilet maybe before they get on the aircraft and they don't interrupt other passengers during the flight.
But he concedes the main point of reducing restroom use is the bottom line. The airline is planning to cut the number of onboard toilets to one. That should allow them to put in another row of seats. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Six big health insurers in Massachusetts have asked to raise their premiums by as much as a third. The State Insurance Commission has said no, so this week they're all headed to court. The interesting thing is, Massachusetts has passed a health care overhaul that is sort of like the new national law. So is this state court fight a preview for the rest of the country? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look.
The insurers are suing because they say Massachusetts is requiring them to sell their policies at a loss. The state says skyrocketing premiums are crippling small businesses. Austin Frecht is a health economist at Boston University. He says the rate ruckus could go national when the healthcare overhaul is fully phased in.
Yeah, I think it'll be lawsuits and threats and fights.
The Massachusetts insurers are arguing that penalties for not buying insurance are too low. Healthy people would rather pay a small fine than pony up for a policy. That leaves insurers who must cover everyone with too many sick people. And insurers say they must raise rates to cover them. Amy Lischko teaches public health at Tufts University and helped implement the Massachusetts healthcare overhaul.
Nationally, there's dramatic changes that are going to cause all sorts of shifts that insurers are just not going to be able to predict accurately. And so they're going to probably increase their rates just because of the unknown.
Premium hikes could slow down under health care reform because it requires that 80 to 85 cents of every premium dollar go toward patient care. But Lischko says the best way to avoid high premiums and lawsuits is to cut the cost of care. Massachusetts didn't do that.
And I think the national plan went the same route. Let's cover everyone first, and then we'll look at how we can constrain healthcare costs. Now, whether you can afford to do that on a national basis is another question.
A question that may be answered in the courtroom. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The new healthcare reform law requires chain restaurants to post the number of calories in every dish right on the menu. Well, Starbucks was one of the chains lobbying lawmakers to pass that bill, thanks in part to lessons it learned in the Big Apple, as reporter Jill Barchet tells us.
Margot Wu-Tan waged an 8-year war to get restaurants to list calories on the menu. She's the director of nutrition policy at the Center for Science in the Public Interest. She says the entire restaurant industry fought her every inch of the way. But after a year of counting calories on New York menus, things changed.
Because once restaurants had the experience of actually analyzing their menu items, posting it on their menu board, seeing how their customers reacted, I think they finally realized that the sky wasn't going to fall down, that they were going to still be able to do business.
Starbucks found posting calories might even be good for business. Philip Leslie is a Stanford economist. He studied more than 100 million Starbucks cash register receipts. He found some unexpected things about how customers view those creamy, gooey caramel macchiatos.
You're pleasantly surprised that the calories in the beverages are not as high as you thought they were. On the other hand, you're unpleasantly surprised that there are more calories in the bagel than you thought you were getting.
And Starbucks customers reacted accordingly. I bumped into Hillary clutching a soy latte outside a Starbucks on Lexington Avenue on the Upper East Side.
I've stuck to the same drink, but I've just cut out the treat that used to go along with my coffee.
Food sales are down at Starbucks, but the company's selling more coffee. Professor Leslie says Starbucks is even pulling in customers from the competition.
For the ones with the Dunkin' Donuts nearby, they actually experienced an increase in revenue by around about 3%.
But Starbucks says it isn't rushing to post its calories right away. The business benefits only percolate if everyone else has to post too. And the government isn't expected to put the law into effect until 2013. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet from Marketplace.
Every Scrabble player knows the rule. No proper nouns allowed. But there's a new version of Scrabble headed to stores in the UK, and Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith says companies, people, brands, it's all fair game.
TiVo, Kanye, Pepsi will all be legal in the new edition of Scrabble. Toy industry analyst Sean McGowan says this will attract younger players and more M-O-N-E-Y.
They may not have the SAT word vocabulary the older player might have, but this generation of kids under 25, extremely plugged into pop culture, it gives them something against an older player.
But some old school Scrabblers are skeptical.
Horrified.
Industry consultant and card-carrying Scrabble player Richard Gottlieb says the changes dumb the game down, which Scrabble doesn't need to do.
We had a ton of new young people get into Scrabble due to Scrabulous.
That would be the Scrabble-style game that took Facebook by storm. But industry analyst John McGowan points out the new Scrabble could generate new products. For instance, can you spell Jay-Z without a hyphen?
Then they're going to sell the official Scrabble dictionary of proper names. And the time-honored tradition of creating a problem and then selling the solution.
The recession has given board games a bump. Sales were up 4% last year. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
And finally, if you were going to bother counterfeiting money, would you make $1 bills? A bar owner in Juneau, Alaska says somebody left 13 fake ones in his employee's tip jar. It looks like they were made on a home printer, too. Some of them were blank on the back. The owner laughed it off, said the economy must really be bad to set your sights that low, and he reimbursed his workers 13 real dollars. That's a pretty cool boss. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. We hope to see you online. Videos and blogs and other nuggets at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.